And we are Better Together, KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Holly Eva. And that was Jack Johnson, Better Together, just after the Garden Island Homegrown Bluegrass show. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia, which is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Canvas. It today, Kauai Canvas. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you, Kauai Canvas.
Kauai Canvas, professional gallery quality giclée canvas printing and digital image capture now available on Kauai. Managing print flow, stretching, and even crating. More information at 212-6971 or online at kauaicanvas.com. Kauai Canvas, stretch your imagination.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So this is Felicia, and in the studio with me, I have Sai Shim. Sai, are you potted up?
I'm potted up.
Okay, very good. And this is going to be a fun show. I'm really looking forward to doing it. I would have to call you an activist. Is that fair for Hawaiian sovereignty and nationhood? Does that feel like a good label?
I don't know. I was kind of shocked by an activist label. But, sure, you can call me activist. You can call me. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm an activist.
Okay.
More of just a guy looking to have things be a little better for everybody.
Okay, I like that. Well, one of the things you asked to do this show, and I was really excited to be doing it, as recently coming out of KCCC, Kauai Community Correctional Center. I have to say that's like getting a paid scholarship to getting your master's degree in contemporary social problems or something. You get a lot of exposure to what works and what doesn't. And so we were going to speak somewhat about what it's like being in jail or prison. There was two other guys who were going to come with you, and one couldn't come because he's still adjudicated, right?
Yeah. So Jimmy Rodello is the other person that was going to be coming in today. He was doing some time for assault.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty well known, publicized youth pastor that beat up a guy that was supposedly dealing drugs to the kids, and so he ended up doing time for while I was in there. I went in actually November 12th, and Jimmy came in just a couple weeks after, I believe, and I've known Jimmy for a really long time, since when I first lived in Anaholo, like 94, and his kids were just around the same age as my kids, and I hadn't seen him for years until I saw him in jail. Just to back up a little bit, 1991 was the first time I actually went in jail.
Okay.
Okay, in 1990, I was on my way back to Hawaii from California. I was working at a place called the 6-Day Advanced Course, which was a ropes course in Santa Rosa, California, at which time I ran into a little problem where my girlfriend's little sister was raped and left up on the mountains by some guys, and she called me. I got upset and ended up going down and beating up one of the guys and facing 25 years in prison.
Wow.
So that was my first real experience with, you know, the system and having to deal with the reality of doing something like that. And so, make a long story short, I ended up not getting 25 years. I plea bargained for something that I didn't do. I got a 2-year sentence. And during my sentencing, they told me that I would be sent to prison, to the correctional facility, to be rehabilitated. So I went to, I was in the Sonoma County system, and about 3 months into it, there was an article that came out in the newspaper, that Sunday article, Sunday newspaper there, it said that 99 out of every 100 prisoners that go through the system in my jail that I was in ended up back in prison within a year after being released.
Right. The recidivism rate is super high.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So I did this, I wrote this whole 14-page report and of my own and sent it out to all kinds of people. And, you know, all you got is time in there. So I was, I did a whole statistical chart of how long it took, like, 10 guys to get out of prison. It took something like 52 years or something for. Anyway, to make a long story short, I get kicked out of prison on my fourth month. The warden calls me into the office and tells me, throws the papers down on my, that I had written and tells me, what the heck is this, Shim? And I told him, well, it's just my opinion. But, and basically I was saying, you know, there's no rehabilitation going on. There's they're called correctional officers, but there's really no correction going on. They're looking at you, watching you do your thing, and pretty much everybody's learning how to do crime better. So I get sent home. I get sent home, I get kicked out of prison, and I end up coming back to run the Hawaii Youth at Risk Program.
Okay.
With juvenile delinquents in lockup. It was a very successful program. We actually worked with a lot of really hardcore kids. We got the presidential award for being one of the top, the nation's most impactful youth programs in the nation. And so that was really my first whole thing with prison. Now, not until I came into prison here, not thinking that it was going to be anything.
Well, let me be clear on something. You said they threw you out of prison.
Yeah, he actually kicked me out of.
So you were set free.
Yeah.
And did you get served time or did you have to still be on probation?
I was on probation for 5 years.
5 years. And yeah. Then, and you said you had to plead guilty to a different offense than
the assault charge.
So what was your offense that you had to plead guilty to?
I pled guilty to terroristic threatening. And they had a girl take the stand who said that I was going to rape her.
Oh, my gosh. Uh-huh.
And I never seen the girl in my life. That's the God's honest truth. But it was either plead guilty to that or possibly take it to trial and go possibly
spend
do 25 years and go to San Quentin.
So if I'm interpreting you correctly, you felt that there was a level of extortion in the plea deal.
Oh yeah,
you felt extorted.
Well, we had all the evidence that I didn't do a lot of the things that they said I did. My attorney and we had an ex FBI agent who did a whole lie detector test with me. They wouldn't allow that. And then when we walked in for the preliminary hearing, they're still in the middle of civil cases, and the judge stopped the whole courtroom and said, oh, ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Shim here. I can't wait to get to your case, Mr. Shim. Have a seat.
And that's because you have a famous father.
No.
Okay.
No, that was up in California, so he didn't really know who my dad was.
Okay.
But yeah, so that was my.
And then I want to ask you one other question, then I'll bring you back to where you were telling the story. Mm-hmm. And just so the listener knows, Sai and I haven't really discussed any of this before, so it's a really a raw conversation.
Yeah, and I wanted it to be that way.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't want us to rehearse this or think that I was talking to anybody in the system or anything. I just wanted to come and just share my heart and share the truth about what's happening.
So when I'm asking some of these questions, it's because I really don't know it. So yeah. I'm just wondering, are you still adjudicated in any way? Are you completed probation?
I'm still on probation. I'll be on probation they gave me a year probation and time served. It was a third degree assault charge that I was in that happened back in 2010 for punching someone. And I also had a contempt. I had missed a court date.
So am I doing anything to pull you out of probation by having you on the air?
No.
Okay. That's important. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to be clear on that. All right. So you said something happened in 2010, you got in a fight apparently. If you had an assault charge.
Had an assault charge. So I went to prison. Finally, actually I was back when I came to the studio before with Kaimi. You know, it's not like I had been hiding.
But you had a warrant out on you.
Yeah, there was a warrant out on me. But, you know, there was a lot of things happening in the community. Kaimi and I were doing lots of work in the community.
Yes.
And we still are. And putting on concerts and doing all kinds of different things. Well, but it got to the point, once the whole thing with the Hokulea came like a potential reality for us to be doing that.
To go around in a global trip.
To possibly get on a crew and be one of the crew members, it caused me to actually have to
turn yourself in.
Get this all completed and taken care of. So, and it was just prolonging. It was the court date was set for March 31st, which is, you know, 2.5 years later. So.
Right, so you're living like a wanted man for a very long time. If you don't, that's what I noticed when I've gone to advocate for different people. Usually, honestly, when I go in and advocate for somebody, it's because they're standing up to something that seems like injustice. I would call them political arrests more than raw crimes, though I have gone in for raw crimes when I want to see what somebody's going through or to support somebody. But it's amazing the amount of time that somebody can be going to court maybe 30 times in 3 years before they actually finally end up in jail. So you think, if they were so dangerous, they need to be incarcerated, why are they loose for 3 years?
Yeah. Well, when I was in jail, I was told there was close to 2,000 people that they were looking for on warrants.
Yes.
On this island alone.
And you are listening to Kauai Soapbox. This is Felicia with Sai Shim, and we are discussing our criminal justice system.
So, when I went into prison, part of the conversation was really along with the warden, who comes out and meets with the inmates 4 times a day. So in the Kauai system, there's people in the modules that are locked down 24/7. Okay, they get out maybe two hours a day. And then there's a program called the LTS program.
What does that stand for? Lifetime Stand.
Lifetime Stand program. Which was created by the warden and his staff. And I had heard about it. In fact, one of my classmates, Lou Lindsay, he's the captain at the jail. And but never really knew about it until, of course, I got there. So my first night there, it was November 12th. I turned myself in, and guys kept telling me, you can go outside. Now, going outside is meaning you're going out to the LTS program, which is there's no fences that are locking you in. You're pretty much walking around outside freely, and if you want to run, you can probably run. Of course, it's a 7-year charge if you do. But it was just an awakening for me. Just like, it was a blessing, actually. I mean,
going to jail.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a blessing for me. I know it's hard for people to imagine that, but.
So help me with it. What was the blessing?
The blessing was that I got a reality of what our Kauai's system is and how blessed we are to have what we have. Because there's nowhere in the world, definitely not the United States, where there's a warden that is going to come out and try and work with these people. Work with guys that have been in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, 30 years. And I know while I was in there, there was a big article and stuff about the warden, how his system is and what he does. And just in my opinion, I think we're super blessed.
So in your experience, you didn't observe any of those things that you read in the paper?
No. Well, there is the warden who actually swears and, you know, may come out and call us idiots. But I think it's all taken out of context. A lot of it was taken out of context. And before you go out to the program, you actually sign an agreement that you don't have to be out there. But there's all these quirks. There's all these quirks of you get to have a Friday night cookout. You get to listen to the band. You get to be on a workout crew. You get to get to work in the kitchen. You get more freedom, but there's criteria that you got to follow.
Such as?
Such as you got to get up. Got to make sure your bed's all set and nice and tight. All your things are organized. Your shoes are in place. There's all these details. TV time is only a certain amount of time. And you have to engage in it. You have to participate in part of the program, parts of the program. And one of the parts of the program is the reality training. Reality training was set up for all the pre-trial guys, which was, I was pre-trial being in there. And the warden used to do the pre-trial. The reality training. The reality training is really getting to the talking about all kinds of different issues, from deception to how we get where we are to, you know, he's created, he's been doing it for years, so he's has a whole list of things he can choose from. And somehow, at some point, the warden asked if I would do it, if I'd take over doing reality training. So I did, and we're in there with guys from traffic tickets to murderers, to rapists, to burglars, drug addicts. We're right there with everybody.
And I have to grab one thing there. So somebody with a traffic ticket is going to be in there with people who are potentially maybe unbalanced.
Yeah.
And that's something, we can come back to this later, but it's something that I notice when I go to court in the low area. I've never actually been on trial myself, but I've watched people go to court. And some of these things are what I consider crimes of poverty. And they have gotten arrested on a Friday, basically for being broke. And then they're put in jail over the weekend. And they show up in the morning, and there's some mom. Of course, I'm going to relate to the moms. Can't help it. Some mom in cuffs and an orange suit who just didn't have enough money to pay for a safety sticker or something so trivial. I'm mind blown that they've spent the weekend in jail.
Yeah.
Are they in KCCC or are they in that police building?
They're in both. They're in the police building. They're in KCCC. But the funny thing is, the warden had shared with us, you know, there's guys that come in with traffic tickets, and you wouldn't think they need help because there's all these other big crime criminals that have these bigger incidents or issues that you're working with. But there's been times where the guy that just did his 4 or 5 days for his traffic fine left in 2 days, 2 weeks later, ended up killing himself.
Okay.
So there's those. So my point is, just because of what we read most of the time in the newspaper, is not necessarily what's really going on. You know, what the public hears is everything or sees is everything that happens according to the paper. What the reality training was, and being in prison, because the warden has set up this LTS program, you have everybody, women and men, engaging in conversations about how they ended up getting to where they got to. Over and over and over again. Some of them 25 years, 30 years. Some of them have, there was one family who had their father, mother, and the son in there.
Hmm.
So, and what you start to see is that when the whole ICE epidemic started in the mid-80s, it's the parents, the next generation, the kids, and now the kids' kids. And so there's this whole gamut of generations that you start to have understand, wow, you know, this kid that's in here is in here because he didn't even have a chance. He didn't have a chance to even make it. And everybody's looking at him like he's just evil. He's just the worst. But if you hear his story,
he's a victim.
Yeah. And you can see, you can blame the parents, the grandparents, whoever. Bottom line is, they're part of our community. They're part of us. And now that I've been able to experience that firsthand, one is my family has gotten so much larger.
Your ohana of friends and understanding.
Yeah, and my whole perception of what family is. I mean, yeah, I have this incredible family. I have 6 brothers and sisters, all these nieces and nephews, mom and dad, but cousins and all that. But I don't know. There's this whole being in there, you realize there's people that don't have no family or have been written off by their family. So the question is, what do we do? We're going to just continue to just throw them away, leave them in the cells, and write them off? Or when they get out, there's nothing really that I know yet that's really set up in place outside of the prison, the LTS program, to really support people getting back into society.
So the lifetime stand program, that's what you're calling LTS. I'm assuming you have to make core commitments to join the lifetime stand program.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I'm guessing, but is sobriety. Would that be correct? Or does anybody have the option to not be sober in jail?
No, everybody.
There's no jail. Yeah. There's no drugs in jail.
There's no drugs in jail.
A lot of jails, frankly, there is drugs in.
Now, there has been in the past. And while I was there, there was somebody had brought in some marijuana that was snuck in and things were taken care of. But, yeah, it's hard. I didn't see any drugs being used in jail.
And that's
the other thing, is you get to see that as difficult it is for people to stop smoking ice or drinking or smoking weed or all of that, any drugs, the truth is they can't without dying, because I just seen it. I spent 30 days, I mean, almost 4 months in jail. And guys are fine that have been using drugs for years.
And have you used drugs at all?
Yes. I back in 2000, after my divorce, I went through a whole drug addiction on ice. I ran around the streets of Waikiki, just wreaked havoc. I can tell firsthand exactly what it's like.
And you look pretty buffed and healthy. Is that because you just got done dealing with the Hokulea, or because you sat there and pumped iron in jail?
No, that was actually because I just finished body surfing Allerton's.
Okay.
But the Hokulea definitely has helped. And it's the whole process of me engaging, getting on with the Hokulea. Because it's such a huge endeavor, I'm taking it pretty serious. I'm trying to, none of us on Kauai that I know of yet have actually been called to crew yet. So none of us know whether we even made it. We were two weekends ago, we went up to be with a crew and put Hoi Loa in the water and meet with all the whole...
Is that our Kauai canoe?
No, the Hoi Loa is actually the sister canoe to Hokulea.
And is it from, like, New Zealand or somewhere like that?
No, the hulls are actually from Alaska. They're 400-year-old trees that were used.
Wow.
It's a beautiful, beautiful canoe, and it hadn't been in the water for 11 years. But we went through a whole training with Nainoa, who was pretty
Thompson.
Nainoa Thompson, which is pretty much the lead, and and got just more reality of what it's going to take for us to do the worldwide voyage. And, you know, the truth is we don't know. The truth is there's all this reality of what we know we can do, but we've never done anything like this. Nobody has, and
Even the Polynesians didn't make it all circumnavigating the globe. Yeah. But I would have to think, relative to the core piece of your story about being an inmate, and I use the word activist because I didn't want to say inmate or ex-offender, because that's not who you are. That happens to be something that happened.
Yeah.
So I would think having something as high mana or as important as being on a circumnavigating the globe in a Polynesian voyaging canoe, that gives you a sense of purpose. That gives you traction. Many people, when they come out of jail, they don't have something to give them traction.
Exactly.
And when I was asking if you have ever had addiction experience, so I'm glad, Cy, that you're able to just totally own it. Yes, you've had experience probably with a number of drugs, but the one that seems the worst of them today, it seems to be crystal methamphetamine.
Yeah.
When you spent the 4 months in there, maybe you'd been off for a while anyway.
Yeah.
Were you off for a while?
For years, yeah.
For years. Okay, so you didn't go through detox when you were in jail?
Yeah, no.
No. Okay. But did you see people going through detox in jail?
Oh, yeah. You see guys come in really crispy. I mean, really, like, you know, they just came right off the street.
And does it hurt getting off drugs physically? Does it hurt?
I don't think it hurt physically. It's, no.
What does it feel like?
Actually, it feels good. When I actually...
It doesn't give you the shakes, or, I mean, we always hear withdrawals is something awful.
Well, for me, it was back in 2003. So I went from, like, 2000 to 2003, okay? And I came off the streets of Waikiki. I actually told my mom I was going to go to the store one day. This is after I had a divorce, lost my wife and kids, you know, had gone through so much and couldn't stay at home. This is on Oahu. And just told my mom I'm going to the store, and walked into Waikiki with a backpack on my shoulders and never showed up for another 2.5 years. Disappeared. And just hurt, sad, ashamed of myself, disgusted with myself. And the more you go deeper into it, it just gets worse. And one day I just said I was over it, and I told one of the uncles from the streets, I said, I'm going to call my mom and have her come pick me up. And she came to pick me up, and it's funny, the day that she came to pick me up, I walked in the door of our house in Manoa, and the phone rang. And just so happened it was my dad, who just asked my mom, has anybody seen Cy, anybody heard from Cy or heard about Cy or anything? And she said, a matter of fact, he just walked in the door. So I get on the phone, and my dad's all, how you doing? You okay? Yep. Well, I ran into this guy, Master Hong. And
from the Qigong stuff?
Yeah. So he's from China, and I think maybe he can help you. So I go and meet Master Hong the next day. And lo and behold, that's how my whole thing with Master Hong started. It was, I went to go see him.
And I want to hear about that in just a moment. I need to tell the listener, you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei K-A-Q-A, Kilauea K-2-8-4-A-L, Holly Eva. This is Felicia, Kauai Soapbox, and Cy Shim is in the booth with us, sharing a really powerful experience. So Grandmaster Hong, he was here for a long time.
Yeah.
So you learned about Qigong, and I didn't know that you had done that either.
Yeah, so I ended up walking, meeting him. And at the time, he spoke very little English, so he had an interpreter with him, and he looked at me, and before I even sat down, he knew everything about me, like what my bowels looked like, what my shishi looked like. He knew everything. Just from looking at me. Before I even sat down, he knew where my energy was off and where I was hurting and what my, you know, he knew, like, what my big toe was going on. So I was pretty... you know, pretty amazed by what he said. And so he gave me these three exercises. He said, you just do these three exercises. He gave me this powder, this herbal powder, mixed up with 22 herbs, I believe. And he told me to drink these herbs and you're going to do an enema with these herbs for the first 4 days. So I,
and at that time, were you still using drugs?
No, I was just, that was my second day not using drugs.
Okay.
But you gotta remember, when I came off the streets, I was probably like 110 pounds.
And what are you now?
Right now, I'm about 160.
Okay.
So, so I started doing these exercises, and as I'm walking out, Master Hong just tells me, "Sai, just do the exercise. You never mind, do exercise." So, and these exercises take me all of about maybe 10 minutes, not even 10 minutes.
So you're going to show them to me after the show?
Yeah, I'll show
okay.
you. So I do these three exercises, right? I don't sweat. I'm used to playing sports and, you know, working out and stuff. So I'm thinking, well, I'm just going to do the exercises because Master said, do them in the morning, do 8 in the morning, 8 at night. So I did these three exercises 8 times each. And probably within a week, I started feeling really a big change and started being able to feel like energy in between my hands and all kinds of stuff was going on with me. And then I started doing more and more. And I just started feeling amazing by doing these Qigong exercises and doing what Master told me to do. So I ended up joining a canoe club, and ended up doing my first Molokai channel 5.5 months after I started.
Excellent.
Which people were like, what? No way.
Because you had been kind of emaciated and wasted away.
Oh, yeah.
So you had that much recovery. So I didn't know what to expect in this interview, but I'm hearing at least 2, if not 3, messages of hope. One is, if you go to KCCC, it might not be that bad because there's an involved program there, the Lifetime Stand, that helps to turn your life around. They have reality training, and it makes you feel stronger. You're also speaking to people maybe who might be suffering right now from drug addiction, and you're saying you can recover from it. You look like you've continued to recover from it. You're speaking about your own personal path, included Qigong. I did have somebody named Sun Tok Wang on here about a month ago or so, and he's doing Qigong training right now, teaching classes. I guess I'm giving him a free plug out of Kilauea. There's mm-hmm. probably other people who are doing it. Sun Tok is very, very talented with body work and stuff, too. So there's hope, maybe, for people who are having a hard time.
Yeah. And we actually did 2 drug rehabilitation programs with Grandmaster Hong, which were probably, I would say, as far as physically being able to get the drug and the, what happens with the drugs is that it goes into your system and it actually sits in the walls of all your organs.
Crystal methamphetamine.
Yeah. So it may not show up in your drug tests and you may stop for years. But ice, just like if you look at those of you who smoked ice, if you smoke ice and you blow smoke into a glass pipe, there's what they call frost. So it's all this frost is on the outside of that bowl.
Like literally cold?
On the glass, yeah. So
like condensation
yeah,
freezes.
Just like when you smoke cigarettes, it starts to build up in your system and it stays, the tar stays there. So really the only way that you move that out is through these Qigong exercises. That's as far as I've seen. And what the Qigong exercises do is actually moves energy through your system. And it's directly related to specific, organ-specific. So it starts altering how your organ's energy is, which directly affects your emotions. So in Eastern medicine, every emotion is directly related to one of your organs. Like, for example, the liver. Okay, the liver, the color is green. In the 5 elements charts, the animal is tiger, and the emotion is anger. Okay, with kidneys, the color is black, the animal is deer, and the emotion when the kidney is imbalanced is fear or paranoia. Your lungs, what happens is the color is white, and when your lungs are imbalanced, you get really sad and emotional. So when he started telling me that, I was like, well, hello, that's what's happening. Because it's directly affecting your liver, your kidney, and your lungs. So people, of course, what happens with ice addicts? We walk around scared, paranoid, and then we're all sad and emotional. So if you start to balance those organs, it starts to shift and clean. Then you know you're cleaning up those organs and they're getting rebalanced. And for me, once you start doing that, it starts to affect your own mind. And a lot of times when we did the course, I remember there was a time when the doctors and everybody was saying, oh, you know, it starts making holes in your brain and you can't feel those holes once there's holes. Well, that's not true. It's not necessarily true, and there may be medical doctors out there that disagree with me. But I saw it firsthand on the test that we ran when we did our first 45-day program with Master Hong.
And did you notice a clarity change in your own mind? Did you go from feeling unclear to clear?
Oh, yeah, completely.
And Grandmaster Hong is no longer on Kauai, but do you know where he is?
He has a house in Punalu.
So he's in the States still yet?
Yeah, oh, yeah. He's lives
on Oahu.
Yeah, he runs between L.A. and Oahu, and he's also in Colorado a lot, too.
Okay. But, I was too busy when he was here. I just wasn't
yeah,
able
so
to
there's,
really do
I mean, there's, there, we're real successful with the programs as far as cleaning the systems out. I think what was missing with the program, with Grandmaster Hong's program, is what's happening in the jails, in our jail, with the LTS program. Working
lifetime
with,
stand.
Yeah, with the lifetime stand program. And I've talked to the warden possibly.
And the key pieces of the Lifetime Stand program, can you name them so people who've just tuned in understand what, when you say that the Lifetime Stand is what's missing from Grandmaster Hong's Qigong practice, what are those core elements that you feel was so therapeutic from the warden's thing at KCCC, the correctional center?
One is, mainly it's you're working with the truth. You're working amongst your own people that have been suffering, people that have considered criminals, people that have been in the system for so long. And, you know, they often talk about it in prison that the best people that could help us is the ones that are in here, is ourselves. If you're going to help the guys that can help them the most, more than any PhD doctor, because they've gone through the experience themselves and they've experienced everything that goes around from it, from, you know.
So you are giving me a list. One was who you're with. I see you're looking through a stack of papers. We hear the rustling going on here. Who you're with. Is there a commitment? When I hear lifetime stand, that means that's a long commitment.
Yeah. So the lifetime stand, there's agreements that you have to follow all the rules of the program. You have to pretty much, it's really designed for each other to support each other. That was the best thing that I see. And you know, there's young guys running it. Like, for example, my nephew, Babu, he was actually...
Oh, is he there? Okay, great.
And Babu's doing really great, by the way. I was so proud of him. The guys, like, you know, that are taking leadership roles with the people, with the group, and you wouldn't think, just because they're younger than you that... Or even just because they've been in longer than you doesn't mean that they can't now lead. People that you're put into positions that people wouldn't expect you to be in. Like, Bob was a lot younger than a lot of the inmates, but he got to be in a leadership role.
He's about 24 now, isn't
yeah.
he?
So it actually, two things. One is it forces Babu to take on a responsibility that he probably wasn't used to being taking on and being accountable for. As a leader, you're accountable for everybody else. same time, as someone who's a lot older than, especially me, being his uncle, having to listen and take instruction from somebody at 24 or my nephew, you got to get off it. You can't, you know, you can't run your own trip. You can't tell, you can't just be, oh, I'm not going to follow this rule. You know?
And without going into too much of his story, I have known him since he was a little boy, and when he started making difficult choices is right after his brother died.
Exactly.
And really, there was a couple of, there's three boys that died amongst his siblings that, you know, one was his direct, right above him, brother. Yeah. And so things like that, grief can spin you out. And at least that was what my observation was for him at the time, is that he was doing pretty fine until Kai died in a surfing accident.
Yes. So there's a lot, that's the thing. You start to realize that, wow, all these, there's a whole bunch of them in there like that, that something happened. Nobody wakes up one day and says, you know what? When I grow older, I want to be an ice addict. Or when I get out, I want to be an alcoholic. Or when I get out, I want to be a rapist. Nobody wakes up and says that. Nobody comes to that one day and just starts dreaming about being that. Something happened, and it just spirals out. Whether, you know, and not to take away from them being responsible for the actions that we've all done. But in the program, you just hear time and time again of how much grace there is from the warden and the staff at working with these guys. I mean, they fought. It's not like everybody comes out and just is wonderful angels in the LDS program. It's constantly battling your own self. You know, I don't like, you know, I'm going to take this cookie. I'm going to take this, you know, there's all these little things that you can get caught for. And.
Oh, you meant that literally?
Just yeah,
like
literally.
Swipe a cookie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, take a cookie, take whatever.
And I actually want to back that one up a little bit too, because sometimes I'm really surprised when I see people being in front of court, and people think, why is she spending so much time in court? I'll claim that because I went with James Olalem to his 15 court dates for standing in front
exactly.
of a bulldozer to keep some Ivy Kapuna ancestral bones from being bulldozed out to put a septic system in their place. So, I mean, something as trivial as standing up for a grave site of the ancestors can cause the expense and the emotional trauma of 15 court dates, and I would watch as we would go in there. There was about 10 to 15 of us supporters of his. Everybody takes a half day off work to go in and be able to back this person up. The cost and the expense to the extended family, and I would see person go before the judge, and some of them, they didn't even exactly steal the beer. But they put the beer in their jacket before, so they were stopped before they even left the store, so that it looks like intention to shoplift. And they're in there in the orange suits and the cuffs. And so something that is important to me, we're going to have Justin Kohler on here, our chief prosecutor, next week. I felt like he's really been doing some good things. I'm not at the effect of being in the adjudicated system, so I can't really speak as if I know, but I know what is important to me is I think it's really important that when we have people who have a health hazard or a life crisis, that we can get them into something that is therapeutic like Qigong and Lifetime Stand without being quite so shame-based. Do you think that that would work, Cy, or do you think that unless it's just such a big club over the head like having all your freedom taken away that you wouldn't straighten up.
I think it can work. But I also think we gotta continue to look for other alternatives. It's the system right now is like, for example, what I'm going through right now in my probation and my friend Jimmy, and our other friend Nick is for the assault charge. Is we go through every Wednesday for the next 4 months, we go through anger management class.
Do you have a hot temper?
I don't think so.
Like, I have never punched somebody out, but maybe it's because I don't have the confidence to punch somebody out.
No, I don't think so. So,
okay.
But my question, last week Wednesday was the first anger management class that we had, and of course it was just a bunch of answering all these questions on a paper, and the last question was, what do you want to get out of this anger management class? So for me it was I want to know whether we know for sure that these anger management classes actually work for the people that attend these anger management classes. And if there's statistics that actually show that, yeah, people that go through this class actually don't get angry anymore.
Or at least not express it violently, because
yeah.
Anger serves a role.
Mm-hmm.
And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Sai Shim on Kauai Soapbox.
So and she wasn't sure. But I think it's a question that we need to ask, because guess what? When an assault happens, what does the court do? They send you to the anger management class. Like, that's the thing that's the process that rehabilitates the program.
And would it be something, perhaps, like when what you described for Jimmy, who was going to be on the show, and then Nick? Why is he not here?
Nick, I believe, is working.
Okay. So, and is he have an assault charge also?
Yeah.
So what I feel like I heard you describe for at least your first assault offense and then for Jimmy's assault offense is a little bit of vigilante behavior, righting a wrong, stopping, giving a consequence to other bad behavior. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah.
So it's not even necessarily about anger. Maybe it comes in lack of faith in the system, because if you call, that's not going to change the problem. I mean, does the roots come from besides anger?
I think it's different for everybody. But what I'm looking at is not necessarily what the root of the problem was. It's how are we going to help resolve these issues amongst all our brothers and sisters that are up there. There's the anger problem, which comes with a lot of the inmates. They definitely have that. But I don't necessarily think anger management is the best or the only alternative to sending people to. I think.
What do you think would be better?
You know, I really don't know. I just think there's got to be something else besides that. And the LTS program, I think, was really great. The reality training, doing something like a reality training with guys. Because when I started doing the reality training, the first reality training, I had the guys actually write their obituaries. And it's a reality check for them. It was like, oh, my God. I said, you guys all died today, and we're writing your obituaries. So what did you get done in your life? And it was... And then we did a second one, which was your real obituary that you want to have when you're done. And for them, I had more guys, actually, out of 15 guys that I was working with, I'd say a third of them confessed to being molested. And guys that you wouldn't have thought been molested.
I have been told by people in the past when I was working on a couple of different projects, I've had people to where now I realize it happens to a lot of people, and a lot of them
yeah.
are pretty fierce looking. And
yeah.
it absolutely, yeah.
To see there's patterns in what happened, and oh, man, no wonder. When you get to the root of some of the stuff that was being done in the reality training, it starts to... It's like this whole, you could just see this, their faces change, their physicalness change, it's just this release of, oh, why, got to say it to somebody. Tell the boys, tell these guys, and not, you know, be badgered for it or made ashamed about it. And you know, now I can really get help. You know, up until a lot of that time, they're just hiding. All this stuff is just to cover that up. It was, you know, they're doing all this crime, they're smoking dope, they're doing drugs, whatever, just so they don't have to face that. They don't have to have that be the reality. Okay, I found the principles. Okay, these are some general principles of the LTS program. This is right off the paper. I'm going to read.
Lifetime stand.
Okay. The lifetime stand program, general principles. It is important to have a goal in mind. Accept the fact there will be setbacks and obstacles. But if you continue to visualize that goal and work towards it, one day you will achieve it. Be positive and do what needs to be done without complaint. Don't allow yourself to think and or be negative. So don't allow yourself to think negative and be negative. Okay? A combination of discipline and learning leads to confidence. Remember, everyone is a beginner at some point in his or her life. Even your teacher was once a student. With nothing to prove, there is no need for confrontation. When you get to the point where you have to fight, you've already lost the battle. You always can do a little more than you thought you could. If you push yourself beyond that, beyond what you think are your limitations. A true champion can deal with failures and losses as well as his successes, and they learn from both. It's just as easy to make a friend as it is to make an enemy. If you are hostile, expect hostile response. Whatever you project is what you will receive in return. Surpassing another person should not be your goal. The only thing that really matters is what you accomplish yourself. Never think to yourself, I can't do this. Your subconscious will take you at your word, and you won't be able to succeed. Think positively, and your subconscious will help you succeed. When faced with a problem, don't worry about it. Worry is wasted energy. Get the job done the best way you can. A person's life is built not on the years he or she has lived, but on the accomplishments achieved.
All right. Well, those are a beautiful list of things, and I have a question for you. It sounds like when you were in there, you got a lot of support from the warden, the correctional center, and then most of all, by the people that were in the lifetime stand and the reality training with you. When you get out, how does that feel? Does it all of a sudden feel like you've left your family?
You know, there. I was talking with Jimmy today about that, and it was yesterday we surfed it over on the west side, and he was saying how much he was thinking about the guys, the inmates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the day I got out, I went straight to work. I left the jailhouse and went straight to a job and started working. I was blessed to be able to start working, and then was blessed with a beautiful place to stay, to live, and just really blessed with. I mean, it was really godly. I mean, when I went into jail, I wasn't really into Jesus and God, and you know, I believe there's Akua and all. You know, wouldn't consider myself really religious.
But maybe spiritual?
But spiritual. But now, I consider myself very religious.
Mm.
And spiritual.
Religious, like Christian religious?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and it all came from being in there. I mean, there was things that were happening that were just supernatural. Things like people that were coming in, my meeting with Jimmy. It was just
who is a pastor,
and but it, you know, I sometimes don't want like using the word pastor because people start to think, well, you know, he's just this religious guy, but I could easily throw out the pastor and just say this is an amazing, great guy.
So while you're giving him a big shout-out, give his last name, Jimmy.
Jimmy Rodello. And, I mean, there's a bunch of Jimmys in jail. there's so many guys, and while we were in there, Nelson Mandela died, right? So I'm thinking, man, here's some Nelson Mandela's right in here. And if we don't, as a community and a society, actually start doing something different, we're gonna lose the opportunity to have these Nelson Mandelas in there manifest into who they really are and who they're capable of being. The guys that, I mean, there's so many amazing, amazing guys in that prison. And I'm sure some of you might have run into them and have your different opinions, but if you saw them the way that I got to see them and hear them the way that I got to see them, you realize that there's some amazing, amazing people there.
So I, at one time, was on a little advisory committee that was 2KCCC. This is maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And something that the Warden Neil had commented on was that he was disappointed with the recidivism rate, and there was several inmates who were in there who did have a challenge with recidivism. And what they had said was they felt cared for in a paternalistic way in there, where they had a family that loved them, and they actually missed it when they were out. So something that we were working on, and that actually was when I was with the Kauai North Shore Business Council, like the importance of being able to give ex-offenders a good job, a meaningful job. But what was also, we had come up with an idea, it never did transfer, but we were thinking of having, weekly alumni dinners so that people could be KCCC alumni, where they could come together and have that kind of caring and nurturing once they were on the outside that they were getting on the inside.
That's funny you should say that, because that's exactly what I was working on while I was in there.
Well, that's really, really good.
It was actually, I was thinking of having a meeting once the last Friday of every month, where anybody who's ever graduated in LTS or went through LTS or been incarcerated.
In the lifetime stand,
that we meet once, one Friday, the last Friday of every month, in different areas, starting in Hanalei, then going to Kilauea. So it's all around the island, and everybody can come together and see, and actually as a community. And I talked to the warden about possibly doing this. I talked to Lou Lindsay about doing it, and their reaction was, well, a lot of people have talked about doing that, but, wanting to do that, but nobody's really done that. And when I started looking at what it really would take, unless the community comes up behind it and really rallies it, it's just going to be another...
Well, I tell you what, when I was the president of the North Shore Business Council, the North Shore Business Council, with plenty of names that people would kind of give a hard time to for, being big business, they were all behind doing that. And another thing that we saw was a challenge is for people who were sentenced to 2 years or more, they typically get shipped off island, so they actually don't get that opportunity in Kauai Community Correctional Center. We are at the top of the hour. I want to tell people you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Holly Eva. This is Felicia, Kauai Soapbox, with Sai Shim, and we're talking about the perspective from being an inmate at KCCC. I have a lot more questions. We also are being visited by some people who we talked to last week who are doing the... I'll let them correct me in a minute, but a ballot initiative for a charter amendment. And so they're going to talk to us for about 10 minutes or so, telling us what they're doing, which is another way of trying to help the community have a voice and have individual sovereignty. Last time Sai was on the show, he was talking about sovereignty. It's not even come up once. So thank you for listening, and Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Bali High Realty, Anahola Stringed Instruments, Aya's Garden, and we're going to hear about a silent drive. I got this going. Oops, hang on. I goofed here. Got to start this over. Something's not up. Felicia doesn't normally have a problem with these things. Let me try again. Okay. Well, I'm going to have these guys sit down, and then I'm going to figure out what's going on. Joan Porter, I just have to give you a big shout-out. Joan, put your microphone on. Joan, my opinion, her and her husband, bit hero. Joan, I appreciate how many different ways you guys have worked as landowners to be building up the community in Kilauea really, really profoundly. Michael Schutz from Kauai Rising. Both of you guys are part of Kauai Rising. Joan, can you say aloha?
Aloha.
Okay, so you are in there, and Michael's trying to get himself set up. But Joan, why don't you tell us about your initiative? Is that the right word for it, initiative?
No, actually, it's a charter amendment.
Charter amendment, but isn't it kind of like a ballot initiative? It's going to be something that's going on the ballot.
That's right. It will go on the ballot. And it's the idea is to, I think the strongest part for me is an idea and a amendment that will have anybody who's working with GMO and or pest, you know, agricultural, commercial agriculture and using pesticides, that they would have to prove that what they're doing is safe. So it's a little different than what is presently happening, where if we don't like having so many pesticides and herbicides sprayed, the people are the ones who end up having to prove that it's unsafe. So this amendment will turn the tables and have the GMO entities prove that it is safe. That's in a nutshell. Michael can speak more smartly to that.
Aloha, yes. It's really about companies can do whatever they choose.
Can you grab her mic while you're talking? Yeah.
Okay. The idea is that the companies can continue to do what they're doing now as long as they prove it's safe. If it's safe, they keep going with what they're doing, and if it's not safe, they'll have to prove it's safe or stop. So that's the general thing. The key is this is kind of a next step from the amazing work that the community's done over the last year and a half with 2491, or which is now Ordinance 960, which requires disclosure and some setbacks. And this is the next step in the idea of putting it on the charter on the ballot in November, is giving the people an opportunity to decide what they want to have happen on this island. Do they feel that the company should prove what they're doing is safe prior to doing it here? And that's the choice that the people will be able to make.
So I read it, and so correct me if my interpretation is right or wrong. And actually, if people were wanting to be looking at this, I did post it. To me, it's always very important that people are looking at the real document. It's 18 pages. It looks like it was very thoughtfully written. You had a strong attorney. Can you give the attorney's career piece? And
sure.
People can look at KauaiRising.org?
Yes.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the background of the person who penned it.
His name is Bob Yonke. He's a very experienced environmental attorney. He's been practicing for 43 years. He's in the process of moving here to Kauai and was really excited about the opportunity to contribute in some way here on our island. Bob was instrumental in stopping the toxic releases from the steel mills in Pittsburgh and from stopping the air environmental pollutions of the copper mines in the western states, and in addition is one of the authors of the Federal Clean Air Act. So he's extremely knowledgeable, and we were delighted to have him show up on the scene.
So you had somebody who had a lot of experience. He showed up. This was something that you guys had thought about a year ago, because I had you in here and there was a different initiative for going on the ballot. So when there's a ballot initiative, what that means is if enough people sign, it allows all the voters to have a direct opinion instead of needing to barrage the county council for 6 months of spending the night in the rain and perhaps taking a... I'm not saying that the time wasn't deserved, but for those of us, and I was one of them, who went to meeting after meeting after meeting, it was an exhausting marathon. And in this particular issue, what I was really conscious of is the people who are the most impacted by it are already sick.
Exactly.
So if they're on oxygen and they have a hard time walking from their car to the front steps, let alone up all those staircases to sit in there, I saw that and felt shame, because that people couldn't, they didn't have the stamina to be able to endure 1 or 2 hours of it, let alone, like, I think the biggest marathon for me was 36 hours
mm-hmm.
of being present. And that takes almost an unhealthy level of commitment, you know, to be asking that of people again and again and again. That was the apex of the amount that it came. So mm-hmm. when this goes on the ballot, if people sign this petition, that doesn't say it's enacted into the charter. What that says is everybody gets a chance to vote on it.
Exactly.
And then if people do vote on it, the charter is like the county's constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes in right in the charter. So regardless of who gets elected to the county council or mayor, this says if people are going to poison the land or use words that end with IDE, which is really means die, side, if people are going to use that, they just need to prove it puts the onus on the people spraying it rather than the people downwind, that it isn't going downwind, it's not going in the soil to where it gets into the water table, not running out onto the reefs. Looked like there also that the pollen isn't blowing out. So this should be something that the industry can handle, because they're saying it's not blowing away. So if it isn't blowing away, they're all good. If it turns out that it is blowing away, what happens?
Well, they're saying, as you pointed out, they're saying it's safe and it's not negatively affecting the people of the land of Kauai. So if that's accurate, they're in great shape. And if it is going out, they will not be allowed to continue if, in fact, it's poisoning the land or the people or the water. And what you pointed out earlier about the amount of commitment required in the past was huge demonstration of the concerns of the level of, on the part of the people of Kauai, and the commitment to having a healthy environment and a healthy land and people here. And this does eliminate a lot of that requirement. So we just need a little bit of a few people to get on the petition, and then we can get this on the ballot, and then it's up to the people to decide if this is what they want on Kauai or not. But it lets the people decide on this next step.
And I'd also like to add that indeed the amount of commitment that was called during those hearings, there's going to be an equal amount of commitment that is called forth from all of us, because it is we, the people, who are going to have to stand up and say, this is what we want, and this is the change we want. So there's no middle person in this. This is direct. You'll have an opportunity to vote. And the challenge for people who are aware of the huge amount of pesticides that are being sprayed and some of the activities of the, I don't even want to say the activities necessarily, but the pesticides that are being sprayed, and that it's a time of teaching, it's a time of sharing what that means, and that it is impairing livelihood, and it is impairing the wellness of the earth, of the Aina. And this is a time where we all have to come together and stand up and speak up about what we believe is right. And it's imperative. It's imperative at this time.
So if people feel motivated and this is meaningful to them, I'm getting that if the petition is signed with enough things, they would vote in a general election and they would go yes or no in agreement with it. And if it is in that for the general election, there'll be a lot of information with the ballot. But for it to get on the ballot, what do they need to do? They need to sign this petition, but where would they sign the petition? You can't sign it online. Is that correct?
That's correct. There are various volunteers who are carrying the petition, and they will, particularly on weekends, they are at some of the grocery stores, at the food, at the market, farmers markets, some outside of post offices. I think Michael has another idea here.
Just one sharing a microphone. So we're if anybody wants to either participate in gathering petitions or to sign a petition, our volunteer coordinator is Laura Lynn, and you can reach Laura Lynn at 826-6513, or you could send an email to kauairising@gmail.com, or you can go to the that information is also all available on kauairising.org if you want to help out in any way, whether volunteering or find out about how to sign a petition. There are currently five teams around the island if you want to participate in petition gathering. Laura Lynn, depending on where you live on the island, will give you the name of a team captain that you can connect with, and they will coordinate the teams and the gathering of petitions.
And Felicia, I'm in the studio by myself right now with these guests. And so I did have a caller in there who didn't want to go on the air. Caller, you can call back and go on the air if that was concerned that, you know, we're addressing this issue. But I can't have a background conversation while I'm on the show. So if they want to come on the air and speak to it, if they're concerned that we are promoting a voice, maybe this is this person. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yeah, Felicia, I was just calling to say that I live here in Princeville, and ever since you guys got on the air, I keep getting a lot of static and a lot of, like, there's someone is shooting a pulse or something through your stuff, because it's not clear. And
try and go online. I'm sorry for that. Like, it might be that there is some wind, so 90.9 FM is for Hanalei, 91.9 island-wide, 92.7 on Ahola, but
maybe put it out there to other people, too, if they're having the same problems.
Okay, if they're having the same problem, and people can go on, you could go on your computer to www.kkcr.org and just hit listen live, and
you got to be able to hear to participate, right?
Okay, yes, and then Michael has something to say?
Well, I was just going to try and experiment and see if this microphone is any better, if the caller can...
No, it was like really heavy static, like, you know, and it would come in pulses. It would go...
Okay.
Guys would come clear for a while, then it would go...
Okay, thank you. Well, I can't take care of that myself, but thank you so much for caring that the message gets out.
Okay.
Okay,
aloha.
All right, so, Michael, you were adding something to what we were saying here?
Yeah, I was just suggesting where folks can find us, and that would be at kauairising.org. Or call Laura Lynn at 826-6513, or and she would assign a team or get the information to anybody that needs it.
And do you have any events that you're going to be at or any locations where people would be able to find these petitions? Because how many petitions do you need? What's your goal and when do you need them by?
Our goal is 3,000 petitions, and we need those by – our target date is May 3rd. We have a little comfort zone in there. On May 10th, we will have an event at the War Memorial Coliseum or the Peace Coliseum. That will be a rally with Makana and various speakers and other musical presence. So that'll be a great time. I hope to celebrate the raising of all the necessary petitions. Obviously, if we could get 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 signatures, that would make a real statement on the island. That would be our ideal scene.
I saw the Maui event. They had a number of speakers, and Maui did pull off. They've turned in 10,000 signatures yesterday. I think they needed like 8,500.
Right.
And Dr. Lauren Pang, I think, is an incredibly powerful speaker from the Department of Health over on Maui. That might be something that you guys are doing.
He's very supportive. And one of the things we've done is talk to a number of health experts. Dr. Pang was definitely one of them. Dr. Don Huber, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who lives here on the island part of the time, and Dr. Anthony Samsel, all who are doing leading-edge research on glyphosate and Roundup and the other toxins.
And I've had a lot of these people on the show. So
right.
Over the course of interviewing on this issue, I have learned so much, and it's a really strong process that's happening. I have another caller, so he wants to ask you guys something. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, I had a question for you guys. I'm obviously here on vacation listening to you guys, and you know, really interested in your situation here with the pesticides and whatnot. But you know, I was curious, how do you see the business impact, on the locals here that work for those companies, or even the price of goods and whatnot that you have here on the island for the locals, and how it's going to affect that if they're not able to use pesticides maybe for 2 years or 3 years while they're trying to figure this out.
So I just want to ask for clarity. You think if this passes that they wouldn't be able to use them. That's inferring then that you believe that their current pesticide use is not as they say it, that it is in fact drifting.
My point is that the law, as you say it, will change to where the burden of proof is on them. Okay, that's fine. You can't prove something immediately, right? You're going to want them to have a study or do something that's going to make it prove to you that it is safe, which is understandable. While they do that, they're not allowed to use the pesticides, I would assume, right, while they're trying to figure that out, right?
I would say we are in totally agreement with your concern, and we're working on parallel efforts into finding solutions for jobs and creating new opportunities. This amazing lady next to me, Joan Porter, and her husband Bill have created somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 jobs here on the island in the last year and a half just through their efforts on the land that they own. And so we believe that those solutions are definitely available. We are concerned about the jobs, and one of the things that's really concerning is probably the biggest employer on this island is the tourist industry. And this island is becoming known as ground zero for the testing of pesticides, and far outnumber the GMO jobs, which are important and significant, and if we can find alternatives to that, we think those would be super. And in fact, if we really believe and have faith that these companies themselves have the wherewithal and creative ability to also stay here and continue doing what they're doing in a safe way and continue those jobs and, in fact, possibly expand them.
Sure, and I agree with you. In a perfect world, that would be the case. But the fact is that if you don't have that in place and this law goes into place, those people basically are out of work at that point. And if there is something that is being grown here on the island, either for export or even for, I guess, internal consumption, then the prices of all of those things will go, way through the roof, right? Because your supply is going to be extremely diminished, and you'll either have to import it or you'll have to work off of only organic or whatever may be there.
Well, what we've stepped back and looked at is the total costs of what's going on, and you've identified a part of it. I had a call this morning that the last two births at the hospital down there both had to be medevaced over to Oahu. And I spent the afternoon yesterday with two people from the west side, both who have been coughing and having to go to the doctor for the last 9 weeks, and they can't find the cause of what's going on. So there's another level of expense and cost that we really have to take into consideration.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's always a balance. It's just to understand, I think it's it's fair for people to understand, and I think, you know, to know the full side of this, that if something went into law like this, that there would be a large amount of people who would lose their job until they figured out whether or not it was safe. And then how do you get to the point where you know something is fully safe?
Caller, like the Maui legislation, they did a moratorium to see if it's safe. So it sounds to me like you're speaking to the petition for Maui, but this one is different. It just says they have to prove they're not poisoning while they're still doing business. It's not saying stop doing business. It says just prove that your poisons are staying within your property, because they're saying the poison does stay within their property. So if they're accurate, there's not going to be a problem.
Well, I understand, but you're going to require them to stop until they figure it out. Otherwise, what would be their reason to even try to figure it out?
No, they just have to prove. Am I correct, you guys? Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Well, they can continue doing with whatever they have planted at the time, but this will require that they not plant another crop if they haven't proved it's safe.
Exactly.
Yes. Excellent.
Okay.
And just out of curiosity, because I'm not from here, what is the largest crop that this would affect?
Corn. On this island, the biggest one is corn.
However, none of the corn that that they plant has is produced for eating here. I think that's correct.
And I think it's not even for sale.
Yeah,
it's just seeds for. Go ahead.
It's basically being shipped out.
Yeah,
it's being shipped out. It's experimental seeds, and it would eventually end up as either ethanol or animal feed, which still goes into the. That's my understanding.
Yeah. Part of the concern here is that this, what's happening here, much of it is experimental. So, for example, a few months ago, the FDA refused to grant a permit for corn and soybeans to be used with 2,4-D, which is the Agent Orange
right.
chemical. And so,
well, it's part of the Agent Orange chemical. It's not the entire Agent Orange chemical.
Right. And what that meant was that they were not allowed to use that product anywhere else. And the ruling of the FDA stated that the reason it was denied was it required more research because they were concerned about its effect on the environment. But since that was denied, the research is going on here. So something that was not legal to use anywhere else in the country or anywhere else is being used here in Kauai to test that further.
So, oh, and absolutely. And the reason I called in mainly is just I think all of these things deserve for people to understand all sides of what it means, right? And
exactly.
Yes, somebody being sick because of something like this, that's an absolute concern.
Right.
I mean, in this corn industry, I mean, how many jobs are you talking about?
Well, it's a difficult thing to get a number on, but it looks like it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 on this island, and many of them are imported. But the bottom line is when the FDA makes a ruling like that, they're saying this is not legal to be used anywhere else in the country until it's proven safe. We're saying we'd like to have the same advantages here.
And I want to say to any of the listeners out there, in case there is anybody in the industry, you're absolutely welcome to come in, call in, be a guest, and share your side of the story, because like the caller is pointing out, it's very important to have a balanced perspective. So that group is very, very welcome. I have extended to the group, and I'm on the air extending that they're very welcome to come in. I do have another caller holding. Caller, do you have any other key points?
No, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Okay,
thank you.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Thank you for holding.
Hi, Felicia. Felicia, I think it might have been mentioned, I don't know if I heard it, but the petition that we're signing needs to have people that are registered voters.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so
registered
that's very
voters,
important. Not anybody can sign it.
Exactly.
Even if they are for the bill.
And
then the other thing I wanted to ask Michael, after the voting is in, what percentage of the people that are for the bill has to be on the ballot in order for it to become a charter.
Okay. Just to clarify on that first question, not only registered voters, but registered voters on Kauai, just
okay.
So that's clear.
Okay.
And once it's on the ballot, it's a simple majority of those who vote.
Okay. All right. I thought I'd bring that up because it's important.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we have one more quick caller, and then we're going to hear from our underwriters, and then we are going to go back to Cy's story, too. Aloha. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it?
Good.
Well, you know, I wanted to put a perspective out there on that. That tourist calling, called tourist, I guess.
Sure.
He sounded to me like a Monsanto plant, if you ask me. But anyway, you know, I'm a resident, and you know, I'm not 100% against the science of GMO, but I am against monopolies of companies. I'm against deregulation of in any sort from major companies like this guy. And you know, the fact that it's experimental, the guy hit it on the. You know, it's more detrimental to the tourist industry being known as that, you know, the experimental zone. But I wanted to put this out there for that tourist. I'm a local guy, born and raised here. My kid's born and raised here. My mom's born and raised here. My grandma's born and raised here. So that's pretty much born and raised. And what I would like to say is if Monsanto was putting out vegetables and stuff that we could consume over here or even for consumption, you know, I would actually support them a lot more, but they're not. And so that to the tourists is, don't worry about our job place, because we don't really, we can absorb those jobs in a different way, you know, and we have lower unemployment than probably where he's at. My point being is that they're just wrong. They're not really doing anything useful. And what is the big deal of disclosing if that's the case? So, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I wanted to say to that guy.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, and I don't know what happened to my underwriters last time, but I am going to try again. First time I've had that choke. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Coldwell Banker Bali High Realty, Anahola Stringed Instruments, and Aya's Garden. Well, I got all my little buttons pushed. I don't know. Well, let me just say to them, thank you, Bali High Realty, for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I believe Coldwell Bankers on the North Shore here, Anahola Stringed Instruments, Mickey Sussman, Luthier in Anahola does a great job. Aya's Garden. Oh, look, I got somebody in here to help me. I can't figure out why these guys aren't coming on. This is community radio. I had that there.
Did you?
Yeah, look. So anyway, Aya's Garden in Kapaa and does a great job. And then also, there is going to be a fun drive coming up for KKCR, the station that loves you. That tries to bring all these different issues to you. So, anyway, we support our underwriters. Thank you so much. So, back in here, Joan, actually, I want to ask you for a moment, Cy, do you have any thoughts on this bill? And you see where there is still an overlap, like what you're in here doing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I completely
yeah.
appreciate how much you are sharing with the listeners and myself. I'm going to nail you
well,
with a few
one
questions.
One is I find it really, I know you folks have no control over it, but it's really, really irritating that only those that vote
oh.
are registered to vote
uh-huh.
can sign this petition. Because there's a lot of Native Hawaiians who just, the system is in their eyes, in our eyes, is just corrupt in its own way. And I grew up in a family that's so political. My mom actually ran against Governor Abercrombie back in 1978. She was in charge of the whole Western United States for the YWCA. My father was Dan Akaka's roommate. Danny Noe's roommate went to school with Danny Noe. He wrote the Aloha Law, which is there's an actual law, It's called the Aloha Law, which requires everyone in this state to operate with Aloha. So I come from a very political family. But there's been so much corruption and so much unjust done that many of the Hawaiians are like, I mean, you see it, we're fighting for our lives. Okay? And earlier, Felicia said, you know, you haven't mentioned sovereignty once. Well, it's funny that, yeah, last time I was, you know, talking about being tribal historic preservation officer, filing with that, with the federal government, which gives us, myself, Kaimi, Ed Taniguchi, Ed Kaivi, Walter Apana, all these certain power, in lack of better words, under their own
hierarchy.
Yeah. Which they said, this is the way it is.
Customary chiefs?
Yeah, it's historic preservation officers, which actually sit right below the Department of Interior and above DLNR. Okay?
Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Yeah. So, I ended up asking the governor, actually, when they came over, and it took me probably almost 6 months to get a response. And the question was, Governor, is the state of Hawaii ready to recognize the historic preservation officers? Now, it's under the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966, which sets in precedence for Native Indigenous people to have say in anything historical. I could say this right here is historical to me. And if the federal government was to come in and wanted to do some federal program in here, prior to funding, it states this in the National Historic Preservation Act, prior to receiving any funding, the federal agency must consult with the tribal historic preservation officers. So, in what's happening, what I'm hearing from you folks is that this is a federal program going on here that's being funded by the federal government or being required by the federal government to find out whether the EPA, right, or the
Environmental
FDA,
Protection
the
Agency,
FDA, to find out whether it's bad or good or not, right? So, if there's money being funded by the federal government for this to happen, let it be known right now that I'm saying, as a tribal historic preservation officer, and every federal agency in the entire United States has received my paperwork that I claimed, that I have the right to claim that position. So I did, along with Kaimi and three other people, that they must consult with us. So last time we did this was with the Federal Highway Division, when that whole stuff with Uncle James.
Oh, yeah, with the EV.
Yeah, with all the EVs. Everything had to stop until they consulted with us, which they did. And there was consultation happening. But getting back to, you know, there's all this happening in Kauai.
Meaning the GMO industry,
GMO,
as well as the people.
There's all the GMO. And I think it's really great because it's really bringing a lot of people together from all different aspects of life.
Yes.
From, you know, the hippies to the surfers to the retired people to the guys working at Safeway down at the jail. It's bringing a bunch of people together. Now, the funny thing is that the conversation Alicia and I was talking about was from my recent stint in doing jail time. And believe it or not, when guys get on work furlough at the jail, guess where they get to go to work?
At the biotech industry, right?
Syngenta.
But I want to get your feedback on this. I actually appreciate that industry for giving them jobs.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I give them high fives for that one.
Oh, totally.
I mean, when people are fighting that industry, well, go compete for those people, because I think they get really loyal employees.
Yeah.
A lot of people come out as ex-offenders. I know I have a lot of friends who end up in there. A lot of them I've known since they were in diapers. And they are decent, good people. And I like that there is opportunities given, and so I even throw it out there to people who are fighting these industries, give decent people who are coming out of the correctional system some opportunities.
Yeah. So my whole thing right now, for myself personally, is there's so much going on, and I totally appreciate the work that you guys are doing. I totally stand up for making things right, and that, man, this is the wrong place to be doing testing. Do not do it on Kauai. And but at the same time, where I just came from, I got guys whose father just set his mother on fire. I got issues like that need to be handled like now. These guys need some help right now. And that's great that all this other stuff is happening, but I guarantee you what's happening in there with all the guys, it's all gonna blow up, if not bigger than what we can even imagine. I mean, the jails, you hear it across all over the nation. It's just overcrowded, and you know, this jail was initially, I think, only to hold like 50 guys. It's got like 200 people in there now. So there's like 3 or 4 sleeping on the floor. While I was in there, they had to ship a whole group out over to Halava, which had guys that we had been working with and, you know, are going through the programs, are like doing good, but just the way the system is set up, it's not set up to be successful. So it's all interrelated. It's all...
I really... Cy has shared about 4 things that I'd love to even expound upon further. I wish we had a couple hours, but the one program you mentioned, well, there's a couple things you just said. One of the keys to this is letting the people decide, and you just touched upon how many laws are already on the books that are not being enforced. And that's certainly true for the whole bunch of stuff around the GMO issue. You also brought up the issue earlier about forming this group for guys to get together afterwards, and that really resonated with me because I was in Vietnam, and the way we came home from Vietnam, when your one year was up, you left the guys you were with, you came home by yourself, there was nobody there that welcomed you, in fact, you were kind of looked down upon, and the culture shock to come home, I was in the Central Highlands, and 2 days later, I was in Michigan out of the Army. And there was nobody to talk to who would understand my experience. And as you were describing the experience you were, I could feel the value of having that support group. When you're coming from a really difficult situation, may not necessarily be warmly welcomed to where you're returning to, not supported for what you've been doing, and having that community support is really critical. I really applaud that idea. I think it's really powerful and helpful. We had actually had some conversations earlier about the denied voter, and we had some great ideas about having the keiki be able to sign, all those people who didn't have the rights to vote being able to sign, and just so that there's a bigger voice expressing their opinions on what the concerns of the people are. So we totally appreciate your idea of honoring that.
I would like to see when petitions go out that are critically important to everybody, is that they're multicolored, so that the white ones that have to be 20 pounds per whatever the weight is, all these really technical things. The ones that count get turned in and make sure everybody's got their name on there right. But to have also, say, a yellow one for keiki who've reached an age of reason, and they can put their age there, and then what I call the denied voter, whether they are a long-term non-U.S. citizen or an adjudicated person or a Hawaiian national that doesn't rescind their right to their own nationhood as a result of... to being able to vote for something. So we have many people who are barred from voting, and it's important to be able to see all of that.
Yeah, and the reality that you can, if you look at what's happening in the world right now, this may seem about GMO, And this may seem like we're voting on this, you know, there's this vote going on, but you look at what's happening in Kiev, you know, with the Russians. And I've been there. I was like, it's like, I can't believe it's happening to this place where I actually went and hung out with in 1987, before it was a supposedly democratic country. But there's, it's being, having the votes be like this, like you got to be a registered voter. That's, you don't, I actually want to read this thing. Can I read this? This is something that, while I was in jail, I was blessed to read one of Gandhi's books. It was funny because this is, and he says, I do not believe in the doctrine of the greatest good of the greatest number. It means in his weakness that in order to achieve the supposed good of 51%, the interests of 49 may be, or rather should be, sacrificed. It is a heartless doctrine and has done harm to humanity. The only real dignified human doctrine in the greatness good of all is doctrine in the greatest, is the greatest good of all, and this only can be achieved by uttermost self-sacrifice.
Yes.
So I think, I just want to put in real quickly, I think you can start looking for yellow petitions for keikis and blue petitions for denied voters. We'll get that out on the streets. I think it's an excellent idea. Felicia brought it up a couple of days ago to me. The other thing is, you know, all the things that are going on in the world, and all, you know, you talk about what's happening in the jail and in prisons, and we're talking about what's happening in the fields and the pesticides, and there's so many things in this world today. And, you know, the truth, in my mind, is the change is only going to happen with each of us. So we each have to go inside and really get pono with ourselves about what's right for me and what's for my heart. Not do the intellectual thing. You know, don't lead with your mind. Lead with your heart and use your mind to be discerning. So that to me is one of the most important things we can do for our planet and for ourselves and for our humanity.
Thank you, Joan. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. That's Joan Porter, Michael Schutz with Kauai Rising, who are bringing out a petition for a charter amendment. I have Cy Shim in here speaking about his recent experience at Kauai Community Correctional Center. I have two calls who are going to come on quickly because we're close to the end of the show when Jazz with John is going to be on. But we're going to hear from our first caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
I think your guests are wonderful today. Thank you, Shim, for coming on the show. I wish little children could vote. I mean, even to 8 years old, because they're going to be the ones that are going to inherit the earth. You know, they have an invested part in the future, and most kids today are so bright and well-informed. I think they should drop the voting age down to like 13 years old. And also, I think there's way too many people that are in jail in the first place, nonviolent offenders, drug offenders. You know, there should be all these programs that your speaker's been talking about in jail should be offered to carte blanche to people without, that don't need to pay for it in outside facilities. So, because the jails don't have to be jam-packed, because a lot of people don't deserve to be there. And thanks again for the show.
Thank you. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just like to just commend Mr. Shim, Cy Shim. I'm a former inmate, and man, it's just a fresh breath here to hear someone on the radio, on the airwaves, speaking some truth. And just wonderful, wonderful. We need to open our hearts, like the lady said earlier, and our hearts can take us places that our mind can never take us. So with compassion and kindness and mercy and understanding the problems that are going on, instead of turning our backs and really opening our eyes and see what's going on, you know, we could really, really make you know, change and for the positive for everybody on our side, including our children. So I just want to, again, commend Cy Shim as a former inmate, man, for going up and saying some wonderful things. And, again, the warden, man, he did wonders for me, and he did wonders in there for people, and he really cares for people. So thank you, Mr. Shim.
Thank you.
Aloha. Aloha. Okay, real quick, last caller. You're on the air.
Hi, can I go off topic real quick?
Real quick.
Okay, hey, there's going to be a meeting. I think it's going to be with the liquor commissioner coming up for Common Ground, and there's a petition of a small group of people that are against Common Ground on the North Shore. I'm going to be putting together a petition for those that are interested in Common Ground. I will be at the longboard contest on Sunday with my petition, and I will be also bringing it to different businesses, perhaps in the Kilauea area, if anyone's willing to sign the petition for Common Ground, for them increasing their hours and even having a liquor license. So I just wanted to put that out there. And maybe if those of you that are listening really value Common Ground, maybe you can attend the meeting. I don't know what it is, when it is exactly, but it will be announced. It's not for a couple weeks.
Okay, and so the longboard contest is in Hanalei this weekend.
Yes, but I'll only be there on Sunday working.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay. Aloha.
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 Okay, I'm really attached to getting a couple questions out, basically for Cy, but with both Joan and Michael's input on this, because you're going to be on next week, right? We have Chief Prosecutor Justin Caller coming in. You're going to be in, and there will be one or two other guests.
Hopefully,
do have them, but I got to make sure they're not adjudicated because, I mean, if they're on probation or they're awaiting trial, which a couple of them might be, frankly. Justin just said it's not legal for him to do that with them. So I think that people can call in. But a kind of question that I'm really going to want to be asking, there's a couple that we didn't really get to yet. We've touched on them. But I want to be thinking about why do we have conditions that bring people to jail? We talked about being abused, sexually abused as kids, and I think that there's a certain amount that comes out from, I would say, cultural displacement. We've had that a lot. You know, when people don't want to be American. There are people who really, really at their core never were asked to be American. They like what they were, Hawaiian. As a nationhood thing, not even as an ethnicity. So I've had that coming up on the show. I think that that will be represented next week because people, it's almost illegal. I find it's illegal to be poor, illegal to be operating outside the system, even if what you are is a citizen as opposed to a corporate being. If you go on just your human being status, you can almost lose everything if you don't participate in the economic system. But when we had spoke briefly, when you first gave me a call, Cy, as you were saying, well, you had some insights to why people go to jail. I know we can't totally address that in 3 minutes here, but that's something. And then I really want to be looking at, especially with the prosecutor, of how we can avoid jail. Like when people really just need therapy, if there isn't ways of going in a different angle, and I know that's more of a prosecutorial question and maybe a policymaker question, but you've been in it, and so you would know better than I would what would be able to redirect.
Well, first of all, I think one thing that really hit me when the warden was talking about was that the truth is, everybody, including himself, every ACO in there, the captain of the jail, every police officer, every fireman, every judge, everybody, we're one mistake from being in there. That's the reality. That's the truth. So it's anybody can make a mistake, including the prosecutor. There's you hear time and time of judges that have been corrupt and police officers. So it's not just anybody. It's not just, I mean, it's just not these drug addicts or it's just not these guys that, you know.
But if you have the money to keep yourself out of jail, you stay out a whole lot better. I know people who have serious drug issues that are able to handle it the way it should be. They put themselves in rehab, and they get out. And if people get their car towed, they can pay for it. So they don't end up in the cycle that brings them into a downward spiral.
And I think what Mrs. Porter was talking about, it really starts in the heart. As hard as it is for people to understand that, that when we can get to that is for real, the truth. That is, I mean, I want to read something that I, in the middle of doing all this reality training, I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh my God, I got to write this down. So I started writing stuff down. And this was actually written on the 22nd of February when I was in jail. Okay. So you got to remember, it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Everybody lights out and I feel like I've been getting these messages being sent to me or being placed, like Gandhi's book and all this. I mean, while I was in there, it was just raining down at me. And things were coming out to me that I was like, what? And then I'd reread what I wrote. I was like, oh, my God. So this is what I wrote. If we, us, the inmates, they keep making the same mistakes over and over again, like coming to jail or doing dope, then it's our own damn fault. We often called it insanity. But if we keep doing the same damn thing to try and remedy the problem, or keep reacting the same way to try and fix their insanity problem, and keep getting the same result, then who is more insane? We as a community, as a society, as human beings, need to continue to search for new ways, new remedies, new right actions, and never give up. Always have faith with love, hope, and compassion, and really, really know in our hearts and in our thoughts that tomorrow we will find an answer, and always stand in that possibility. If not, you become the prisoner to the prisoners, and your world around you, without steel bars, no barbed wire fences, your homes, your cars, your life becomes your prison. Freedom is a choice you choose. No matter the circumstance, it starts in your heart, then moves to your mind, and comes out of your mouth, and becomes your walk, and flowers with seeds of aloha for mankind.
Oh, yes, that is really, really beautiful. I have somebody who really wants to come on the air. Aloha. You're on the air.
Love it.
Good.
Yeah, I see. You know, we let the people decide already. What if it's going to be, you know, this ballot initiative? It's a better way instead of leaving them in the hands of five people, then seven, then one, and then went back to seven. So, let the people decide, ballot initiative, here we go. Mahalo for the time.
Mahalo. Thank you.
Hello.
Okay, it's almost time for Jazz with John. We're going to have the county council report in a moment. I want to go around the room and let you each have a half a minute to say your final thoughts. Joan Porter?
So, Sai, I just want to say absolutely what you read, what you wrote, is what's needed at this time in our evolution as human beings. And we must come together. We must each go inside, find our own heart, and then connect, because we're all one anyway. So it's a unity thing, right?
Yep.
We got to start really living this, not just talking about it. So thank you. Mahalo, mahalo.
I'll just echo that. I think the solution is sitting here listening, Sai. My heart was touched, and I know that the listeners' hearts were touched. So as the people come together, I'll just put in the, again, our number. Call Laura Lynn to support letting the people decide at 826-6513, and bring your hearts, and we'll all get there together. Aloha. Thank you for this time.
Okay. The last thing is I want to read a poem that was written. It's called Before Spring Came in the Year 2014. The rains came, the winds blew. It was very cold. I felt my sins, the darkness within. Yet they searched me out for hope to help them see the light. Who am I, Lord? Who am I but another wretched soul? Again and again they cried, help us, lead us to the light. Then the rain stopped, the wind slowed, and it was still very cold. I heard the voices louder, We are suffering. We are lost. Help us. Lead us to the light. For they were dying to see their light. Of no concern of my own darkness within. Again and again they cried out. But I would not answer their pleas. Instead I bowed, closed my eyes. God, help me. Help this wretched soul to see. Finally I answered their prayers. I will try to help you. I will try my best. But I am not the one who will make you see, for I am blind also. I cannot set you free. Again, the rains came. The wind blew. It was very cold. More and more kept coming. More and more kept pleading. Help us. Set us free. That is who your warden is.
Did he write that?
This is what the warden wrote. Now, you got to think, who goes home and spends their time that would write something like this? And whatever there is being said about the warden, when I just read this again, I was like, oh my God, this guy is, first of all, he doesn't need to be working. He could have retired years ago. But he's got so much, he sees it. He's in it every day, life and death situations. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm honored, privileged, and so happy that we even have this guy in our presence, in our time of life. Because let me tell you, he's saving a lot of lives and helping a lot of guys out there.
And his name again is Neil?
Wagatsuma.
Wagatsuma.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you certainly honored him. So thank you. Thank you, Sai. All right. So this has been Kauai Soapbox with Felicia, KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL. And we're going to hear the county council report, and then it will be Jazz with John and callers that are waiting. I'm sorry that we haven't had time. Mahalo. I'm having trouble with the cart, so just working on it.
Meeting is at 8:30 a.m. and the second special meeting is at 3 p.m. and the regular meeting will be at 10 a.m. All meetings will be in the council chambers at the historic county building in Lihue. Here are a few highlights from the agendas. The first special meeting is to conduct 5 interviews for commissions and boards. For the regular meeting at 10 a.m., the Director of Planning transmits for Council information the 6-year Capital Improvement Program fiscal year 2014-2015, 2019-2020 final report as recommended by the Planning Commission. Council Member Yuka Mura transmits for Council consideration an amendment to the Kauai County Charter relating to the Code of Ethics to allow officers or employees of the county to appear and advocate on behalf of private interests before those county boards, commissions, or agencies for which they are not serving or employed. This is Resolution Number 2014-22. Council Chair Fafaro requests the Department of Public Works provide the Council with an update on the Comprehensive Space Plan and Needs Assessment Report. The Director of Economic Development requests approval to receive and spend the $950,000 36-month federal grant from the United States Department of Education for the Native Hawaiian Education Program to fund a special program designed for at-risk children and youth and their families to address the needs of underemployment, introduce Hawaiian language instruction to assist in improving high school graduation rates, and to help them to become sustainable in the Kauai community and related goals. The county attorney requests authorization to spend up to $20,000 to retain special counsel to represent the county of Kauai for a contested case hearing regarding the Wailua wastewater treatment plant. In committee reports, the planning committee has approved Bill 2461 related to the shoreline setback ordinance, and this is under bills for the second reading. The Finance and Economic Development, Tourism, Vista Industry, Small Business Development, Sports and Recreation Development, Other Economic Development Areas Committee has approved Bill 2531, amending the county's operating budget in the amount of $500,000 for consult services and special counsel for the county attorney's office. This is also under bills for the second reading. There are 10 resolutions on the agenda, and they include mayoral appointments and establishment of school buses. bus stops. There is a non-public executive session, and the purpose is for the county attorney to brief on an issue related to the Wailua wastewater treatment plant. Also for the attorney to provide a briefing on the confidential attorney-client communications related to Bill Number 2531, which is the county attorney's request for $500,000. There will be a public hearing at 1:30 p.m., and subjects include Bill 2534 and 2535 on the budget related to the Solid Waste Disposal Fund in the amounts of $700,000 and $500,000. Finally, the hearing will include the request for $10,000 related to licensing cats. After the hearing, council will reconvene to complete any unfinished business. The special meeting at 3 p.m. is a continuation of the April 2nd meeting and has a non-public executive session for the county attorney to provide a briefing on the Tim Bynum versus the county case. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKZR News.
And Jazz with John is up next. I'm just giving a notice out. Tomorrow, 6 o'clock, Anahola Clubhouse, both the Kauai Farmers Union meeting, and there's a Hawaiian meeting right at the same time overlapping that. So I had a last-minute caller saying make sure that goes on the air. So it just did. KKCR, the station that loves you.
Thanks, Felicia. Another great show. It's always interesting.